This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 29th of June, 2021. And this is the day we are releasing our Q3 outlook. You can see the link on slide two. You can just pop in your browser bar, go to .saxo/QO. There's a quarterly outlook preview and the number of individual articles you can see. And then lucky you, if you'd like to sign up for our webinar on Thursday, you can do that, where we'll be going through the quarterly outlook and a lot of topics we'll be covering. It's a good introduction to some of the themes I think we'll be looking at in Q3. On slide three, you can see the, you go to webinars.saxo and you can sign up for that. And as well today, as we discussed yesterday, today, Peter Garnery, our head of equity and quant, will have his latest equity update, looking at all the themes in the equity market. So some more in-depth discussions there of themes if you want to dive into that. Back to the daily grind here, and it's been quite a grind higher. If you look at the NASDAQ 100, look at U.S. stocks in general, we had another new record high close for the cycle, but particularly the so-called bubble stocks and the interest rate sensitive stuff doing quite well. A strong close there to a new record high. And it somewhat begs the question, you know, what is the driver here? And arguably what we're seeing is in part an unwind of the fear of inflationary levels. And even with the advent of the first initial signs of tightening from the Fed, the market is managing to absorb that as well. So on slide five, I just put the break-evens for the U.S. That's the anticipated level of basically of inflation. And you can see we've been on a downward trajectory for quite some time now. That's, you see there, the twos, fives, and tens. And something like, if you take the five-year, I think it's one of the more impressive ones. You know, we're all the way back to levels we were back in, well back into Q1. So that taking out that fear of inflation, the market buying into the idea, apparently, at least according to these hedges in the market, which is effective with the break-evens are in many cases, pointing to a market that is happy to bid up risk assets. It sees the Fed tightening, yes, but it looks like out the curve, it's not predicting the Fed to really be pricing in anything or to be hiking in any aggressive fashion moving forward.
I think those two slides you just showed here, John, that also helps just to explain why gold remains stuck here below 1800. We got the break-even inflation expectations coming down. We got stock markets making new highs. So anything apart from a sharp weakness of the dollar at this point is probably what is needed. Otherwise, gold is going to continue to trade sideways here for a while.
Yeah, and then we've argued, or we've sort of raised the question whether we're getting any decent pricing information at all from the Treasury market because of a couple of factors. The Treasury winding down its massive general account that it built up in response to the pandemic. That process is not complete until around August 1st, when it has a target date of reducing that account to $500 billion. It's still close to, or I think it's 750 now, the data on slide six, so maybe a week out of date here. This is a slide I put together recently, but you can see the red line is that Treasury general account winding down, the black line showing the Fed's reverse repo, which is spiking crazily in part on the incredible amount of dollar liquidity in the system, some of that linked to the Treasury general account, and potentially, and this is why it's important now, is because tomorrow is the last day of Q2, and we saw in the past some of these quarter end developments in the Fed's reverse repo that were linked to large banks needing to unwind or reduce their balance sheet size to avoid regulatory penalties under this significant financial institution regulation. So in other words, it's just to point out there could be a bit more Treasury volatility. It could be interesting after tomorrow. I don't know what you say to that. I'll say, I know your focus today is a bit more on the ECB and the Eurozone, but it's been tough to sort of get any interesting signal out of the Treasury market recently.
Absolutely, John. I think honestly that this week we might see some volatility if wages come stronger than expected. They are expected to grow 3.6% year on year, which is the highest since 2008-2009 global financial crisis. So that could be definitely an indication that inflation is not as transitory as the Federal Reserve wants us to believe. But still, I find it hard to think that right now US Treasuries can break above 1.7% in yield because of the elements that we talked before, which is high liquidity in the front part of the yield curve. And on the long part of the yield curve, you have foreign investors selling lower yielding government bonds to buy US Treasuries. So probably we will see them trading range bound until there is more active engagement from the Federal Reserve in terms of tapering, which can be in Jackson Hole or the September FOMC meeting.
Key points there, especially the firming up the timing of any potential moves. We've got some housing data up as well. I think it's going to really remind us the insanity of them continuing to buy $40 billion a month in MBS when you have essentially a new housing bubble in full swing here. But take us over to Europe. You've got a lot of focus in the Q3 outlook as well on Europe, and the fact that we're seeing these EU bonds issuance is really picking up in a very big way. So that and as well where you see EU yields heading into the German election.
Absolutely. So basically yesterday there were some noise from a couple of ECB members, Holtzmann and Weidmann, which said that probably it's time to talk about tapering the PEP purchases under the PEP program, and that the end of this program should be in March next year. So there has been some speculation yesterday that the ECB might do something and they should follow the lines of the Federal Reserve, saying that should start to discuss about tapering. But I think that this is just too early because growth is not yet at pre-pandemic level, at the European levels in 6 months, and Italy and France still need to wait a year to go back to pre-pandemic growth. So definitely the ECB will want to keep stimulus, and what does that imply is that we will have European sovereign bonds and also bonds trading range bound until basically the German elections. But nonetheless, this week, John, we have some very important key economic data and also sovereign auctions in Europe to monitor. We have CPI figures today from Germany and tomorrow for the Eurozone. And also we have long-term debt issuance from Italy issuing 10 years BTPs, Spain issuing 30 years, and France issuing 20 years bonds. So definitely it's very key to understand what is the appetite of investors there, especially when it comes to duration.
Yes, and then you're talking about the next generation EU fund on slide 8 with these are the proper bonds that are issued directly by the European Union. Something that it's been a very tiny market. It's going to be a lot bigger market from now on. I guess it'll be interesting to see the demand around those bond issuances.
Yes, it was a couple of weeks ago with a 10-year benchmark, and demand for that bond was just stellar. It was oversubscribed 7 times, and the expectations is for today issuance, because we are going to see the issuance of 5 and 30 years next generation EU bonds to be in line with the one of a couple of weeks ago. I think that the 30-year bonds is going to receive the highest demand for the simple fact that it's poised to price between 20 to 30 basis points over the bund. And in terms of yield, we are talking around 0.5 to 0.6%. And John, even I know what you're thinking. You're thinking that 0.6% for 30-year bonds.
I think you know what I'm thinking, yes.
Is way too little, but here we are talking about a safe haven, basically a risk-free asset, which is going to be a new European benchmark. So real money definitely want to get a hold of that, because from here up to 2026, there will be a whole yield curve built. And when we will compare, for example, funding cost across Europe, probably we will use this benchmark.
Yeah, and then it certainly looks better than a negative 50 basis points, which is what you get at the close end of the curve. So interesting to watch that for sure. Has not been very interesting, to be honest, to watch the FX market this week. We're still waiting for the dollar to decide what it wants to do after the initial rally on the back of the FOMC meeting the week before last. And we're looking at something like dollar Swedish on slide 9. You saw that big move post FOMC. We've seen some consolidation. And I put in Swedish here because it's a little bit interesting with the political issues there with the Prime Minister Löfven losing a confidence vote and allowing the or asking. He's basically resigned. He'll be a caretaker for now and asking the parties in parliament to try to form a new government. This could go on for months. It did at the, in the wake of the late 2018 election. Looking back then, there wasn't a lot of volatility in the Swedish krona. The political blocks are very similar in size. So even if the one side or the other takes takes power, it's not necessarily going to involve any dramatic new signals. Nonetheless, it just could add a little bit of interest. And we've seen a little bit of a failure of Eurostoxx to continue through lower here. So if we get a bit of risk appetite consolidation, a bit of concerns around Europe, whatever, that can multiply into the Swedish krona a bit here. But otherwise, things very quiet in FX, but not quiet in terms of weather. So we've seen some pretty interesting weather developments and pretty scary ones if you're in the Northwest in the U.S. and or Southwest, I guess, in Canada. And it's seeping into the classic weather market, which is natural gas.
It is indeed, John. You can see here on the slide 10 how we got this, heat, they call it a heat dome, sitting over the north, west of the U.S. and also Canada. I think some probably record temperatures has been measured out there right now. And it's driving up demand from utilities for cooling. So you can see gas prices are have been spiking during the past couple of weeks, especially this last week. A little bit of consolidation today, but because we can also see that blue spot in the middle, that's obviously not where people live. It is on the east and west coast, so they're pretty hot right now. So that will drive up demand. But the demand, the weather worries are also having an impact on some of the crops. If you just jump down to slide 12, I just added the coffee price. It's up 6% in just 2 days, getting close to the multi-year highs we had back in early June. And it is the opposite taking unfolding in Brazil, where we got some frost threat to the coffee crop, but also some of the corn regions are having some issues. So so it is just a very volatile weather season we are going through in January. Staying with commodities, we're just having a bit of a correction, a small correction in the crude oil market. It has been on a tear now for quite a considerable time. We're gearing up for this OPEC Plus meeting on Thursday. Market surveys are pointing to a 500,000 barrel increase for August. According to OPEC's own estimates, that will still leave the market in a supply deficit. August estimated 1.7, and for the second half as a whole, 1.9 million. So that basically indicates that OPEC Plus needs to continue to add barrels unless we get fresh barrels in from Iran or from the U.S. shale. But that's basically the deficit that needs to be covered over the coming months. And the question is obviously how much of that OPEC will deliver. And then just fine, we got this Delta variant, which has led to lockdowns in various places in Asia. Australia has been mentioned, and that is obviously raising some concerns about the trajectory of demand.
All right, and we've got the earnings overview for the rest of the week on slide 13. If you want to have a look at that, we'll have Peter back for, hopefully on the call tomorrow. And then macro highlights, as Althea mentioned, we have the German flash June CPI up today. If you take the month-on-month figures for the last 6 months on the headline, we're running at an annualized more than 7%. So we better hope that inflation comes in a lot lower for bond investors in Europe to avoid significant negative returns. To be fair, the core EU and EU flash June measurement out tomorrow is expected at sub 1% year-on-year, and that's year-on-year. And then the German today year-on-year expected at 2.4% on the headline. Again, the S&P, one of the big home price index indicators in the U.S. out today, expected to show nearly 15% year-on-year increases. June consumer confidence, somewhat interesting as that generally correlates with employment. We're still about 10 points from the sort of mid-range of the areas we were pre-pandemic, and which was one of the highest consumer confidence levels we've seen in U.S. history at least since around the year 2000. Again, I think that was reflecting the strong jobs market there. And then out overnight, the Chinese official manufacturing and non-manufacturing PMI. So a little bit to distract us on the calendars, on the economic calendar tonight as we head into tomorrow, where we get the first indication on the payrolls in the U.S., that sort of awkward ADP private payroll change number we'll get tomorrow, which is always a tough one to interpret because it doesn't always correlate so well with the official survey out on Friday. For now, we're going to call it a day, and we'll be back, of course, tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.